Blog Talk Radio.
What up, people? This is Speaking Like You Thinking Radio. I'm your host, Naj. Yeah, that beat got me kind of charged, man. I was ready to start rapping, man. But hey, man, we don't do that here. It's real sports talk. We're getting to some interesting topics with a few interesting people. And y'all got to forgive, I'm running the board tonight. So this could get real interesting with me running the board. First, we're going to pull up 347. 347, is this who I think it is?
Yeah, if you're thinking it's, Superman.
My man.
Flag. What's up?
I got to give the intro. Now, once again, as I was joined by on the first show, I'm joined again tonight by the one and only Chandler Knight, displayer of opinions, slayer of weak opinions, the man and Mr. Legend, man, the homie from BK. Follow him on Twitter at Knight Chandler 7. That's KnightChandler7, the number 7. Definitely check him on Twitter. You're going to see why in a minute as we start talking. Also, I got the homie from the 404. Looks like my man Gordon is here. We're talking about at G Robinson Sports on Twitter. Find him on 929thegame.com/CBS Atlanta. That's where you'll find his blogs. And also find him on Twitter. The voice of reason, who has kept me from assassinating the character of many an athlete over the years, the great Gordon Robinson.
Gordon, what's happening? What's happening, bro?
Chilling, man. We good, man. We good. We got me running the board. So, like I said, this could get interesting. I didn't necessarily have great topics tonight. So, we're just going to troll through what we had the other day and also talk about some things that happened today. But I figure with good guests and good hosts, man, hey, man, we can make it happen.
I'm with it.
First things first. Now, look, y'all got to put your rep on the line right here, because understand something. If this dude goes out and balls like these people are projecting him to ball, what you say today will be held against you. So, gentlemen, this kid who's playing in somewhat low-level football, quarterback, the position that'll get you moved up in any draft. They're calling him the next maybe Brett Favre or Andrew Luck. I'm talking about Carson Wentz. So, Gordon, let me put you on the line first on this one, man. Remember, this opinion will stick to you.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen anything outside of the highlights of the kid, you know. So it's tough to tell. And with anybody's highlight footage, man, you know, you can put somebody together look like an All-American, and they don't turn out to be much of anything. You've got your glamorous tales of Cinderella coming to the party and shining. You know, you've seen the Joe Flacco. You've got from Steve McNair's. You got a couple cases coming in. You know what I'm saying? The story doesn't have to be that you have to come from this big Ohio State, Alabama. You don't have to be that guy to come in to shine in the NFL. All you got to do is work hard. You know what I'm saying? So I am wary of taking this guy as a top 10 pick. You know what I'm saying? Because I just, almost anybody who you haven't had consistent footage of him playing against the best, it's kind of tough for me to say I'm going to take a guy top 10. But, I mean, it's not to say that he won't ball.
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to get interesting, man. I'm wondering the same. I'm scared to put mine on the line as far as what I'm going to say about this dude. Chandler, where are you taking him with Carson Wentz, man?
Well, I actually watch a lot of FCS games. I like watching them. They're fun. So I've seen him play a few times over the past few years. The fact that he was only a starter his last 2 years and he was a fifth-year starter says a lot to me. The fact that he thinks because he did well in the Senior Bowl, that means he can handle NFL speed. Senior Bowl is not NFL speed. So the fact that he equates Senior Bowl to NFL speed bothers me. I get he has measurables. He's what they want in a quarterback, and not that mysterious they that's running everything. He's 6'5". He's mobile enough. He has the big arm. He has the right look. But no, I can't see him being better than, I'll put it like this. If he is as good as the ceiling for, I'm trying to find somebody like that. You know what? If he can turn out to be a Kirk Cousins, I think he'll have a successful career. But I don't think he's any better than a Kirk Cousins.
Okay, but with that being said, where do you – I mean, because I'll trust your eye in saying that you watched the guy a few times. Where would you put him in terms of a round projection? Where would you draft him if you were one of these GMs?
I would draft him in the fourth round.
And
he would be a project. He'd be a fourth-round project quarterback. He'd be a guy that I'm looking at maybe being my starting quarterback in 3 to 4 years. But he's not a guy I'm drafting to be my quarterback this season or next season.
No, that's a great point y'all went to right there, because if you draft this guy as a project and he's given that rope, then you can say, okay, no matter where he's coming from, we're giving this guy some time to develop. We want to see what he can do. You know, if it doesn't work out, you know, no harm, no foul. We bet on, you know, what could be a lottery ticket. But when you take this guy top 10, he's not only expected to play, he's expected when he gets on the field, be a difference maker, be a quarterback who we see as a Pro Bowler in the future. And, you know, when you miss on these guys, you set yourself up for failure, because the time in waiting is time you could have been developing somebody else. So I'm kind of on the same lines as you guys. I don't believe when guys just come out of the blue all of a sudden and they start telling us how great they are. I can understand you saying he's an NFL player, we're going to draft him, we're going to see what he can do. But when you start saying he's moving to the top of the draft board and this kid reminds me of, you know, whatever Hall of Fame name you want to throw in there, you know, the praise starts getting crazy. And the thing about this is we always remember the guys who got drafted low who work out. The Dan LeFevers of the world, the scouts who touted them, you never hear a mumbling word again about it. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I'm with y'all on this, man. I just can't see this dude coming in and succeeding. And if he does, more power to him. And, you know, I just have to eat my words on that one. And let me flip this one more time before we get out of this this Carson Wentz thing. Does Cardale Jones intrigue you more if we're talking about second, third, or something like that? Do you look as a franchise say, look, there's better D linemen and O linemen early. Let me get them, and then I'll get Cardale on the back end if you got Wentz as a serious prospect on your board. Let me go Chandler first.
I don't draft Cardale Jones personally. I think Cardale Jones had 3 good games in college. That's all he had. He had 3 good games, and people lost their minds. Anybody can have 3 good games. I don't think he has the slightest clue about playing quarterback. I think Urban Meyer did that young man a tremendous disservice because that boy ain't got a clue. He ain't got a clue on how to play quarterback. So I don't even draft Cardale Jones. I signed him undrafted, but I don't waste a draft pick on Cardale Jones because he is not remotely ready remotely ready to play quarterback. He ain't ready to play quarterback in college. How the hell is he going to be a quarterback in the NFL? The worst thing this young man could do was come out in this draft. And I kept saying it. I said the best thing that happened to him would have been to transfer, go to another school, and stay in college the full 4 years. He listen, if he gets drafted, I'll be shocked.
Oh, that big arm. Somebody's going to bite. Gordon, your take on that one?
I mean, I agree with the whole take on the Ohio State never really did anything for him during the three hot games. I agree with that whole thing. But at the same time, I think that I think that at the same time, we also have to talk about the state of quarterbacks in this year's draft. When we're talking about guys like this, it tells you what, you know, NFL really is hurting for QBs, man. They put a lot of money around this position. They put a lot of time trying to protect this position. They put a lot of rules and regulations trying to make sure this position flourishes and becomes the centerpiece. And there aren't enough guys to fill that role. You know what I'm saying? It's like how many real QBs are there in the NFL right now that you would actually take on your team?
Maybe 10.
You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
I mean, when you got Kirk Cousins basically trying to hold Washington over the barrel, like, hey, you ain't got nothing better than me. To the point where they have to franchise tag the man so that they don't have to give him a long term contract because they know that he's really not that good. And then you got a crop of guys who coming out who everybody's just okay. And because a guy has a big arm or because a guy is so tall, we're ready to project him as a top-10 player and you're ready to put your franchise around him. Well, you're going to set your franchise back, leaps and bounds. I think you said that earlier, Nod. You're going to set your franchise back a long way trying to reach for a QB. Let's just take, if you're a GM, take this draft for what it is. This is a strong defensive draft. Like I said, you got some pretty good offensive linemen. I think it's some gems at running back in here that you probably won't go until like the third or fourth round. It's some good receivers that could come out that nobody's really talking about. So take the draft for what it is. Get your team better the best way that you can through the draft. But to reach at quarterback, man, I just couldn't see it. I mean, It's starting to become similar to what we saw in the NBA when guys were just snatching high school players up just because they were 6'11".
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. And when you say that, all I could think of was the legend of Shea Cotton, who we used to read about.
Oh, my goodness.
That boy
what happened to that guy? Grade.
Man, nobody knows. Nobody knows.
You know what? I tried to do a Google search just because he crossed my mind one day, and I was talking like, man, this dude was like basically the Jordan when we were probably middle school, high school. He was on the cover of every magazine. I don't even remember this cat going to school, man.
Man, I don't know where
did he go, like Long Beach State or something like that?
I think so. And Shea Cotton, if you're out there, you hear this show, definitely call in, man. We want to hear about you and learn what happened. Yeah, man, that's just one of those names. And like you said, NBA teams got to drafting high school guys, and then the league quality of play started to go down because you just had guys who were nowhere near ready, sitting on the bench, collecting a check, and a veteran loses his job who could actually be productive. So you were basically watering down your league. They got that somewhat rectified, but it's still not fixed all the way.
But back to my man's point, though, what QB has Urban Meyer? I mean, I'll give you Alex Smith, but what QB has Urban Meyer outside of that really had prepared for the NFL?
I won't even give you Alex, because look at the learning curve Alex had when he got to the NFL. They had to rebake him, you know what I mean?
Just the fact that he's still there, though, I give that credit that he's still there and not holding a microphone somewhere. I mean,
true. Yeah, you're right though, because that that Urban Meyer system is built for college play, and I don't know really what you learn about reading passing windows and understanding coverage and anything else if you're playing in that, you know, that system, which is totally different from what you play in the NFL. It'd be like a college basketball player that played in a 3-on-3 tournament or something for 4 years and then went to the NBA. Like, it's a totally different game to what you're playing. And Urban Meyer's track record with quarterbacks in the league project that. Now, to Urban's credit, he would say, I get people ready to play Division I football. I don't get people ready for the NFL. I'm sure he would make that argument, but it is what it is, man. We're going to see some interesting stuff this week with the draft. And, Gordon, since you're on the line, I don't know if Chandler's ever heard how Georgia fans talk about what went on during that Mark Richt tenure. But when you see the kid Marshall come out here, run a 4-2 almost, the most reps on the bench and all this other stuff, and now teams are looking at him, and you see these guys come out of Georgia every year, Gordon. You're looking at Mark Richt leaving at, like, how? Like, how are you looking at that now? Like, are you worried that he's going to do something in Miami, or are you, like, good riddance?
Well, to the I'll hit 2 points first for the whole Keith Marshall thing. Measurables were never his issue. If you remember, like, when he and Gurley first got to Georgia, they were calling him Gershel because it was like a 1-2 combination. They were basically they combined them into one to trying to make a Herschel Walker. But so the measurables wasn't his thing. You know what I'm saying? Gurley was kind of the power back. He still had the speed, but he was more of a power runner. And Marshall was more that was what you see with the 4-3-1. He was more of the spread back, the speed guy. The problem for Marshall was staying on the field. You know what I'm saying? And that was his issue. He had multiple leg injuries. He had a knee injury, a hamstrings, ankle injury. You know what I'm saying? So for the past 2-3 seasons, it's been something lower body after another. You know, like I said, knees, ankles, hamstrings, something. And so I think it was for him, he was just like, look, man, let me at least try to get some money out this football thing while I can. You know what I'm saying? So if he can, you know, and his measurables are going to project him to the fact that somebody's going to give him a look. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, the reps, the 4-3s, all of that is going to put him into a position where somebody's going to say, you know what, I take a shot on that dude because at worst he might be a punt returner. Or, you know what I'm saying, we can put him in a position where we can use him.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll at least have a couple years on this belt in the NFL, at least. And that's if his body can hold up in the league then. But in terms of Mark Richt, man, I mean, once again, I think what Mark Richt will do, I got a friend of mine who loves Miami, man. He's all Miami, Miami, this, that. And I had to tell him, like, Miami is not coming back to the days of the youth. Those days are over. And the fact that they got Mark Richt solidifies that those days are over. If you look at the guys that Mark Richt brought into Georgia, yeah, they had talent coming out the wazoo, but they were choir boys. You know what I'm saying? It was almost like the Falcon filter, you know? I mean, look at Crowell. Crowell is in the league. Georgia put him out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He had to go to, Alabama State and kind of reintroduce himself.
Right.
Georgia put him out. You know what I'm saying? So those days of the U are over. What Mark Richt is going to have to do is he's going to have to realign that fence, man. He's got to establish that like no one else, like Snellenberger never did, because it's a whole different world. And these kids go to these camps and they talk to each other and they recruit each other and they become friends because they have these camps since the time they were 13 and 12 years old, and they see each other all summers and they say, we're going to go to school together. And Florida State has been in your backyard pulling guys out for the past 20, 30 years. You had the emergence of Central Florida and South Florida and all these other schools that come along, and they've been pulling guys out. Urban Meyer has pulled guys out. He's still reaching down from Ohio trying to pull guys out of South Florida because he had those Florida ties. Mark Richt, yeah. when he was at Georgia, focused more on a brand and making it a global brand. Mark Richt, people here in Georgia would complain about Richt because he would let more talent go to Auburn and South Carolina and Tennessee and Alabama, and he would go reach for the QB out in Texas, out in Washington, the running back from Washington, D.C. He would reach for those guys to try to bring them into Georgia instead of locking down Georgia. So I think for him, what he's going to probably have to do is, or he's going to try to do, is not make the U the team that used to look like with Michael Irvin and all those guys, but he's going to try to make the U a global brand and then try to have guys come to it. You know what I'm saying? Try to have guys come down, whoever the best player is in Pennsylvania, whoever some of the top guys are in the Midwest come down that Michigan or Ohio State can't seem to snag. If you're intrigued by the Miami lifestyle, the South Beach lifestyle, come on down. He's going to try to get those guys. Because keep in mind, Miami is still, fair for the most part, it's a private institute.
Yeah.
So they got that going too. Yeah, the day, like I said, the days of the U, those days are the glory days, and they're pretty much done.
That's interesting. You're saying he's going to make the same mistake and not putting the fence around the place he's in and keep trying to draw from other places, and that proved to be his downfall there. Now, look, I want to transition to basketball. So, Chandler, I'm going to stay with college, but I want to take this to you. Sean Miller, coach over at Arizona, I believe, is basically saying it's dangerous for fans to be storming the court, and at some point one of his players or some other player is going to punch a fan, and then there's going to be something done about it. But until then, we got this dangerous situation of fans storming the court. Is he nitpicking a little bit, or is this just something that's going to be argued about every year when it happens, and this is just kind of part of the pageantry of college basketball? What do you stand on this, man? Looks like we lost Chandler.
Yeah, I don't hear me.
Hello?
I don't hear my
Chandler?
Man.
Chandler, I got you
back.
Yeah, I'm
here.
Oh, yes. Okay. Did you hear the question?
Yeah, yeah. See, Sean Miller is under the impression that Arizona matters in the basketball landscape outside of the state of Arizona, and they don't. So he needs to shut up. No one cares about your team enough that even if one of your players hit somebody, they say, oh, you're from Arizona. It's no big deal, okay? And I've never had a problem with the court storming, just in general. I mean, the fact that it's coming from him speaks volumes to me because this guy's been – he's a sore loser, and that's where that came from. That's just a sore loser speaking, okay? Because when your fans have stormed the court, have you had anything to say? Oh, that's because your fans don't get to storm the court that much. I get it. No, I don't have a problem with it, man. I think it is part of the pageantry of sports. Now, some of it is orchestrated, I believe. Honestly, some of it's orchestrated and all of those things. But when you see, like, the Georgia Southerns and the Georgia States and schools like that, when they in their tournaments and they win and the fans come on and, you know, all of that, or you know, one of those real rivalry games where it happens, then, you know, yeah, that's part of the pageantry of sports, and they need to leave it alone. This has been going on all my life. I have yet to hear about somebody getting punched in the face. Okay, and I come from the era where, you know, when you drove down the lane of basketball, somebody could break out a set of brass knuckles, punch you in the throat, and it wasn't a foul. Okay? So if they wasn't doing it then, what makes them think they're going to do it now? I don't want to hear from Sean Miller. Okay? I don't want to hear from Sean Miller.
Okay, understood, man. And now we talked about the little kids. Now we got to talk about the big boys, the NBA. And if you're going to talk NBA, you got to talk about one thing first. And we're going to do that. We're going to hold that line. We're going to talk about the one and only Steph Curry. But before we get to on the court, let's just talk about what kind of conversation he's driving to where he's getting people to try to compare him to something, and they're coming up short. Some of it is interesting. Then you got old school guys just throwing dirt on the new guys and saying, oh, in my era, that guy wouldn't have done this. Now, look, I got great respect for the one and only Oscar Robertson. I'm not saying this, you know what I mean, just to demean Oscar Robertson. But we do have to kind of admit that Oscar may have went a little far, you know what I mean, in what he said about Steph. How do you take that, Chandler, with the respect that Oscar Robertson has earned?
Well, Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double for a season. He can say anything he wants, first of all. secondly, to say that somebody will play differently in your era is not knocking them. See, this era now we're in, where God forbid you say somebody might be as good as somebody, you're criticizing them, I'm tired of that nonsense. The facts are that they can't hand check and foul the way they used to. You put Curry in one of those eras, is he shooting 40-foot jumpers? No, because somebody will go out there and clothesline him and get suspended. It's okay. That's really what they're saying. With the way they play defense in this particular era of basketball, which is to say very minimal defense, because that's the way the rules are set up, a guy like Curry is going to flourish. You put him with the set of rules that they had previously, where you could allow hand checking, where a guy like Sidney Moncrief, whose hands were so huge and strong that when he put them on your hip, he could pick you up and move you like a box. They called him Sid the Squid for a reason, okay? When you had guys like that, when you had guys like Maurice Lucas, who when you decided you were going to get off fans out there and throw up a 40-footer, that would just put a forearm in your chest every single time. Steph Curry only weighs 100 pounds, man. He weighs 100 pounds. So what Oscar's saying is, if you allow these guys to beat him up the way they could in his era, would Steph Curry be scoring at the pace he's scoring? And the answer is no, he wouldn't. We already know he's got ankle issues. You think somebody wouldn't stomp down on that instep, man? Come on. That's really what he's saying. He's not knocking Steph Curry. He's not putting him down. He's stating facts. Now, would Steph Curry still be a great player in the NBA in those eras? Of course he would. Would he be doing ridiculous things he's doing now? No, he would not. I firmly believe that. Is it some of the, you know, get off my lawn, you damn kids? Yes, of course it is. I'm old. I like my stuff. Your stuff is new. It frightens me. I don't know what an emoji is. Is that a gremlin? What the hell are you doing? Of course there's some of it. And the fact that people can't acknowledge that and just say, you know what? Would Steph flourish in that era here? Would he flourish where he is? Probably not. You know, he's always the greatest shooter ever. I think Alex English might have something to say about that. The man led the league in scoring for a decade. Has Steph done that yet? Then he's not the greatest scorer ever.
Then he's not the greatest scorer ever. We definitely need some time before some of these accolades get placed on him. Like some of this stuff is getting, you know, out of hand. But at the same time, man, that's a bad dude, man. And you got to respect him. But like you said, you go back to hand checking, the more physical play, running through screens, bumping cutters, that ease of movement away, it does change things. Gordon, where do you stand with Big O and Curry?
I mean, I agree with a whole lot. I didn't take it as Steph Curry couldn't play in my day. I didn't take it as a Steph Curry wouldn't be great in my day. I agree in the fact that I think the rules were different. Like you just said, the rules were different. And people who are playing now don't understand that. And people who are commentating now don't really understand that. I mean, typically, as commentators or as TV analysts, I would assume that you would be knowledgeable about the game. And being knowledgeable about the game, you would be knowledgeable about the game's history and knowing the differences between the defenses and offenses that were played in years past. But these guys now, they're so prisoner of the moment that everything that happens today has to be the best. Oh, he's revolutionizing this. He's changing the game. When that's not at all. They were great shooters. They just didn't have a 3-point line then. You had cats pulling up from 30 feet out. I hear stories about it all the time. They just didn't have a 3-point line. So the fact that it's a 3-point line there And now you can kind of gauge it, and it looks great. You know what I'm saying? And everybody in the world is watching, as opposed to just a region or a town, because in the 60s, 70s, hell, even to in the 80s, you were stuck watching the team that was playing in your area. Unless you, yeah, you know, waited till like Sunday, and then you got the nationally televised game, you know, which was typically like Lakers versus somebody or Celtics versus somebody. So you were stuck looking at the guys who you know. But now everything is global, is rapid. Like, I wasn't even watching the game the other night. I had, you know, I was working, and it popped up immediately on my phone, just bloop. And as soon as I touched, I just saw Steph Curry. As soon as I touched the button, the video popped up of him shooting the three from, you know, from down near half court. So I agree, the guy's a good player. Let's give him time. Let's, like you just said, let's stretch it out and see what he does. Because if it all goes away tomorrow, are we still saying that he's the greatest shooter ever?
Yeah.
Or was he just some flash in the pan? I mean, if it all goes away tomorrow, is he turning to Jeremy Lin? Is that what we label him? Because Jeremy Lin was revolutionizing. He was making strides. He was killing the game. The hot 16 games. The world went crazy. And now you don't even realize that he's only playing for the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, and anybody out there, you can go through the archives of Speaking Like You Think of Radio during Lin's sanity, and you can hear me plainly stating that this dude walked in from the D-League while everybody else was playing a staggered, shortened NBA season schedule. He had fresh legs, and for that 16 games, he looked like a first-team all-NBA guy. And as it wore on and time went on, we got to see what he actually is, which is a nice, solid, rotational NBA guy. But that's it. So yeah, definitely on that one, man. And I got to say this one, too, though, because the other comparison that came yesterday, I retweeted it. I've seen a lot of people were laughing at him. Chandler, I already know how you feel about the one and only Phil Jackson, so I don't know how you're going to go with this. But when Phil Jackson compared him to the great Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a.k.a. Chris Jackson, I don't understand why people didn't get that one. Like, Mahmoud had an injury-plagued, controversial career to where we never really got to see him be him for 82 or a long stretch. But as far as ability, as far as, you know, just the quickness, the handle, the quick release on the shot, being able to shoot it out to 30 feet and make ridiculous shots, you know, not to mention his disease, because the guy had Tourette's. Like, you're talking about a pro guy with Tourette's. You know what I mean? How difficult is that? And we don't even need to talk about his time at LSU when he came out the box in a real competitive college field where you had to stay. And he's giving people 50 with Shaq and Stanley Robinson on the team. He's first option. Like, that's how good he was. So I don't understand the blowback, man. So I need y'all to explain that to me or see if y'all kind of agree with me on that. So Chandler, I had no problem with Phil's tweet. Like, why did people look at that as a bad comparison?
Because, again, when you do a comparison, it's supposed to be, now you're saying, well, this guy's better. It's for some reason, you can't compare players anymore, because if you compare this guy to this guy, you're cheating this guy, which is the stupidest thing ever. Because, first of all, that's how the history of this game is passed on, okay? That's how the history of sports is passed on, and comparing this player to this guy who played 30 years ago. And then you learn, oh, really? Oh, he was that good? Well, let me see if he was good as you say. And all of a sudden, you just learn something about the history of the sports you follow. That's gone now. That comparison, I thought, is about the only smart thing Phil Jackson has said all year. And it's the only thing he said all year that didn't involve the word triangle, okay? Because if you anyone who saw Mahmoud play, which apparently only 10 of us did, you know, I don't know, because, you know, certainly nobody saw this kid play. His release, you couldn't stop him from getting a shot off.
No.
And he could put you on skates anytime he wanted, just like Steph Curry. And he was smaller than Steph Curry, quiet as cat.
Yeah.
So yeah. I thought it was a perfect comparison. when he said in terms of his being able to get a shot off and his quickness and his ball handling, that's exactly who Steph Curry is. But Steph Curry has managed to take it to another level because, again, with the rules and his dedication to his craft. Let's not act like Steph Curry hasn't working on his game. I mean, this was a guy not even 3 years ago where people wondered whether he'd be able to survive in the league. He was being compared to T.J. Ford. Okay? Little guy who keeps getting injured. See, everybody forgets about that. We've kind of forgotten that he was being compared to T.J. Ford as a small, constantly injured guy who might never make it in the league because he can't stay healthy. That was just 3 years ago. So I thought, like I said, you know, it's the smartest thing Phil Jackson said all year, and it's the only thing he said in the season that didn't involve the Orange Triangle.
Indeed, Gordon, close this out. Then we're bringing in the Great Royce Knight. I mean, the Great Royce King. Excuse me, Royce.
Yeah. Once again, I think that when you compare someone, there's so many. Like I said before, there's no one as an analyst or as an announcer, a commentator. Very few are historians. I think we've all harped on this point throughout the call. Very few of these guys are actually knowledgeable enough to be historians of the game. So when you make when you throw McMurro's names out there, when you throw them out there, what you're doing is you're making a comparison to a guy who you see skill level wise. Mm-hmm. With fans and analysts here, they hear a name that they don't even really know. You know what I'm saying? They don't really know because you weren't a basketball fan. You weren't a basketball guru. You're not in the loop. You're not a historian. You're not an avid watcher. Or maybe you just started watching, and you don't see them in the top 50, or you don't see them on NBA TV when they're showing all the great games of yesteryear or things like that. So somebody would hear that and say, oh, they're comparing him to some scrub. He wasn't great. How do you reduce Steph Curry like that? You said Steph Curry was nothing. And I think that's how everybody came out with, oh, Phil is this and stuff. You see what I'm saying? I think everybody was like, oh, that dude wasn't great. Oh, man, he just reduced Steph to some dude, you know, blah, no. And people who actually watch the games are saying, no, do you know this guy's skill level? Do you know what he's done? As you just going from LSU, like I said, from the whole LSU to Denver, you know, all the way throughout his career. People, you have to know what he's done. So I think that's the big thing for me. That's the big issue in the fact that a lot of people aren't historians, so they don't do the research, or they don't know, and they don't care to know, because all they want to know, all they know is what they see on TV or what they see on YouTube, and that's the extent of it. So when you call a man and you compare him to someone, immediately they haven't seen him, they haven't heard of him, so they think you're putting Steph down and belittling him by calling him someone that they don't know.
Yeah, after Phil sent that tweet, probably Basketball Reference probably got a million hits of people going to Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's card and seeing, oh, well, he only averaged X amount of points. He ain't Steph Curry. But, yeah, right now we are joined by the official ref with a whistle, just got through working a game. Man, I know you missed that travel call tonight, Mr. Royce King. But we're joined by the great Royce King. Find him on Twitter at Royce King _. Royce, what's up, man?
Ain't much, man. I'm happy to be here, man. I'm going to have to ask you to ease up on that great, brother. That bar is real high. You got me striving to keep, you know, high jumping over this greatness thing. You know, I'm just a regular old Joe, love the game of basketball.
Did Tim Tebow chase greatness, Royce? Well, you're going to have to chase greatness. That's the way this thing works, my man.
I feel that. I like that.
Your thoughts on the field comment, and I guess we'll move on after that, and I'll get to some more playoff stuff with you and then run it around the panel. But your thoughts on that field comment with Mahmoud?
Well, I don't really have a lot. I thought the gentleman on the panel, you know, covered it well. I was listening when you were speaking about, you know, Steph Curry and being the greatest shooter and all that, and that's when I really had kind of like pressed one, was trying to get in. I wanted to go around and be a part of that conversation, but I don't have any issue with anything that Phil Jackson said. But if you allow me to, you know, point out, you know, what Steph has done in such a short time in terms of, you know, why, you know, like Chandler said, I mean, again, these guys have already said some things very, you know, poignantly that, you know, the eras are different, right?
Yeah.
So with that being said, let's just look at who is currently ranked as the number one three-point shot maker in total. And that's Ray Allen. In 16 seasons, Ray Allen put up 2,973 total made three-pointers. Steph Curry is currently in his seventh season. He's at 1,479. That is a difference of 1,494.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the pace that Stephen Curry is on has garnered him the conversation. That's why we're talking about him. It's the pace
but
that
Royce,
he's on.
Royce, can I add this real quick? But wouldn't we compare that to the NFL with passing yardage and say that the game is not only different, but the focus of the game is different? So if you had a Reggie Miller or a Ray Allen today, they'd be shooting 10 to 12 threes a night.
Well, I'm sure that's absolutely true. I mean, being an official, one thing that comes out, you know, since I picked up the whistle is it's been about freedom of movement. So as it's been alluded to, like I said, I heard what everyone said, and I agree with it. So nothing I'm saying is against any of the points that have been made. It's in support of it. So with the eras being different, as Chandler pointed out, as you know, basically we were trying to say, yeah, of course someone was going to touch Steph Curry up in a different era. He's going to fill them nightly, and given his slight frame, given what we've seen, you know, early in his career in terms of the injury history, he would probably be subject to feel pain more often. Maybe he's not playing the 78 and 80 games that he's played basically the last three seasons. Maybe it's more like 60 or 65, maybe even a 50-game season, just because the physicality back then was so great. And the reason why it was so physical is you got to remember there was a stretch where there were only two referees and not three. Oscar Robertson is a product of playing all that basketball, becoming a Hall of Famer with only two officials on the court. So he was filling bodies every night. So I'm not trying to take away from Steph Curry. I'm just trying to say, and I just wanted to highlight basically where he was in pursuit of who is the greatest three-point shot maker to date. The guy at the front is Ray Allen. But we all witnessed Ray Allen coming in from UConn. We all know that Ray Allen was more than his three-point shot, correct?
Yep.
I mean, he's more than that.
Right. And Steph is as well, the ball handling, the driving, and also the ability to cut the court up. Because, look, Steph makes usually the pass that leads to the assist. The hockey assist kind of hurts him as far as his assist totals, because usually they're breaking down the defense so well because of the spacing. But some person didn't log this show long enough, so it's only 45 minutes. And we're coming up on that time. So I do have to say, I apologize for the short show. We're going to have to talk to the staff about this. This cannot be done. But 10 seconds to go. Man, thank you all for calling in. We'll get much better on the production side. I'm going to put them boys to work, and we're going to get this better. But shout out to Chandler. Shout out to Gordon. Shout out to Royce. Thank you all for calling in. Tomorrow night, we'll hold it down. I think I can do this on the phone solo. So we gonna rock like that. And I have a whole list of treats for us to roll about. But thank y'all for calling in once again, man. This is Speaking Like You Think of Radio. We out.
Yep.
Now, the fact that I didn't time that right, I'm not even going to discuss that. I'm just going to say this is Speaking Sports, Speaking Like You Think of Radio. We're closing out. Thank you for the callers calling in, giving me that show, giving me that work, really, when you actually listen to it. Love the points the boys brought tonight. And we're going to get out of here and look for more of us in the future. Opinionated, real sports talk, no PC, no restraints. We get it in. Good night.